Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Looks like a great Sunday morning. Some nice weather coming up. We'll update it all for you in a few minutes. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, we go to Dr. Jeremy Silver, who's Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, for the Week in Health. Dr. Silver, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us again. Let me push the button so we can actually hear Dr. Silver this time. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Dean, how you doing?
Doing very, very well. So as you may or may not know, you know, when I'm, when I have some downtime, I like to sit and read, the latest information from the Centers for Disease Control. And they had a very interesting article that came out this week about the HPV vaccine and the positive impact that it is apparently having. First, explain what it is, and then explain what this new update is.
Yeah, so HPV, human papillomavirus, is a virus that affects humans. And let me just say before I continue that this conversation is going to relate to topics that may not be appropriate for youngsters. So I caution parents if young folks are listening. But it's a virus that affects primarily people of reproductive age because it is passed through sexual contact, both genitalia to genitalia and also genitalia to oral cavity, and it can lead to cancer. And that's sort of the big talking point here is that it's not just a sexually transmitted infection potentially. But also, when it does infect the body, it can transform the cells and cause them to develop cancerous mutations. And so there's a vaccine that's available, routinely available for kids that can start as young as 9. And it has significant effect. We've seen reductions in cancer in women of childbearing age of up to 80%.
That's enormous.
It's enormous. So yeah. It's unusual to have a vaccine that's that effective. Might I say another vaccine of similar effectiveness would be the measles vaccine. So just a plug there for vaccines in general. Basically it's available all the way up until 45 years old, and then it seems to have less impact, and I don't believe it's offered after that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I'm glad that you gave the preface that if you've got small children around, you may want to use some parental discretion there. But I think this information is so important when you have such a huge drop by 88%. Among teenage girls and 81% among young adult women, I think parents need to know that. Adults need to know that in order to protect their kids. I mean, if you want to shield your kids and, bury your head in the sand when it comes to important information like that, I guess that's up to you. But I think for most people, it's very important to know that this HPV vaccine that was introduced in 2006 is incredibly effective, it seems.
Yeah, and I would just say, for those with vaccine hesitancy, or for those who may have a legitimate concern about the vaccine side effects, you always have to look at the risk of the disease versus the risk of the cure. And if the risk of the disease is greater than the risk of the cure, then typically you recommend the cure. And in this case, while some people can have allergic reactions to vaccines and rare autoimmune events, they are vanishingly low. It's not to say they don't happen. They do. But the risk of developing cancer from HPV is significantly higher. So to me, a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anyone is going to talk to their own doctors about this, is it young girls, teenage girls and young adult women who are most affected by this?
It is, although it's available to everybody. And so would recommend that if you have a youngster, talk to their pediatrician or primary care doctor. The schedule is, like every other vaccine schedule, it's complicated. I don't think any of us commits these to memory, but they're readily available online. And, of course, on the CDC website.
Yeah, it does affect men as well, but be aware of that. That's quite the finding. One thing I wanted to ask you about this that came up this week, the former talk show host Wendy Williams, who is the subject of a documentary right now, released information that she is living with frontal temporal dementia aphasia, which is similar to what Bruce Willis has, apparently. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, first of all, my heart goes out to anybody who's suffering with this disease. It's a horrible disease. It strikes down folks in the prime of life, and is just incredibly debilitating. So frontotemporal dementia, and that the name of the disease is descriptive. It describes where in the brain the disease has its impact, and that's in the frontal lobes, where your personality exists and your executive function, meaning that all of your task generation comes from that area, and then the temporal lobes, where you have emotions and some other behaviors. So it's it really destroys the personality. There's a couple of different variants. But the bottom line is that they don't, it's a challenge right now because the cause is unknown. We think it's probably genetic. So those with family history are at higher risk, but it starts to impact people in behavioral ways. You can have, personality changes and deterioration in hygiene and socially inappropriate behavior. And it's just, from there, it just totally degenerates. So it's really just an awful disease, and no known cure at this point.
The word in that whole diagnosis there that I think most people recognize is dementia. Similar kinds of symptoms for this as people suffering other forms of dementia?
Correct. Yeah. So it starts with more of a behavioral component typically. So if you were to ask, well, how would I know? You know, if someone that you normally interact with is completely normal and then starts to display bizarre behavior or become unhinged in scenarios where they normally wouldn't, lack of self-awareness or just something feels different, you know, that's a good indication that you might want to talk to your doctor just in general. Of course, there's so many different things that can lead to behavioral changes, but that's the numero uno. And they can often start out subtly, so people just kind of maybe blow it off or put it to the back of mind until it becomes more of an obvious thing.
Yeah, you mentioned that this often strikes at a fairly early age. Wendy Williams is 59. I got to think that Bruce Willis is somewhere around there, give or take a couple of years. Does that seem about normal? A normal age for something like this to happen? You know, mid-50s to mid-60s, say?
Yeah, prime of life. So 40 to 65 is the range in which symptoms typically begin to come to the forefront. So, yeah, both Wendy and Bruce Willis, I think, fit within that range.
Yeah, is this something you I think you had said that it could be hereditary, because the 815 area code just dropped a note saying my maternal grandmother and one of my first cousins on my mother's side both had it and died young. Is this something that people should be concerned with if they have family members who have had it?
That's a tough one. Thanks for that excellent question from the caller. You know, then you have a very interesting philosophical question that arises, which is, if you could test for the gene, do you want to know? So it's because there's no cure. You know, that I guess it could be a weight hanging over you in either way. But my suggestion for that person is maybe to see a genetic counselor. You know, because the field of genetics is moving at the speed of light. There may be tests that become available that aren't available today that become available tomorrow that can help risk stratify and just help you plan. So certainly something that could be important for that caller.
Yeah, that's something for everyone to think about a little bit, you know, whether it's dementia or, you know, whatever it is. Would you want to know? What would you do? I've talked to so many people in all the shows that we've done on cancer, on breast cancer, on Alzheimer's, on the forms of dementia, people who are diagnosed. And they wanted to know. They wanted to live every single minute as fully as they possibly could. And I think probably I fall into that category as well. But I guess everybody would be different. I'm sure, you know, you in treating patients must, you know, see reactions of all kinds.
It's true. You know, and some folks may want to just live their lives as if there was a shot clock when maybe there wasn't. So it's just different strokes for different folks. But these hereditary diseases without a cure in which frontotemporal dementia fits, just really challenging. And the hope is with ongoing research that, you know, in the next 6 months, somebody comes out and says, hey, I think I figured this one out.
Yeah. Several people texted in and said that Bruce Willis is 68 years old, so that falls right into the range that you are talking about. This is Dr. Jeremy Silver on with us from Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, the medical director of emergency medicine, who answers your questions and our questions. 312-981-7200. If you've got a comment, if you've got a question for Dr. Silver, we're coming to you next. Dean Richards Sunday Morning on WGN with Dr. Jeremy Silver. The Week in Health, 312-981-7200. It's our phone number if you've got questions. The 773 area code says, Dean, whether you're healthy or not, it's best to live your life fully every day. Boy, that's the truth. I had said that, you know, that if you knew that you had something that I would want to know so I could, you know, live every day fully. But that's an excellent point that you make. You should do that whether you're healthy or not healthy. Doctor, also from the 847 area code, we have the question in. First of the year, I went on a diet as everyone else did. I began exercising, which I've now slowed down with. I've went on an all no-carb diet, which I've now slowed down in. What is actually effective? Am I doing anything dangerously?
Great question. Thanks, caller. And I think millions of people woke up this morning with probably a very, very similar, if not an identical narrative in their head. You know, diets, this is the holy grail of the human existence. If we could figure this out, first of all, whoever figures it out is going to be worth $1 trillion. But more importantly, is going to be responsible for a lot of extended lives. So, you know, I can't comment on whether you're doing things safely. It sure sounds like you are. Calorie reduction diets are exceedingly common, and they certainly can work, but they're extremely hard to maintain because you basically have a set point of calories that your body is used to, and your brain, you know, is stimulated in a way that tells you, you know, hey, you're not getting that set point. You know, let's get things going and you know, pick up that donut for crying out loud. So it's extremely difficult. The diets can work, but it requires a lot of discipline. And of course, there's a variety of other diets, but many of them are going to revolve around cutting carbs. Simply because carbs are in some ways empty calories, and they get converted to fat in the body, which of course is what you're trying to avoid. So very tricky. Of course, the equation is so simple, it's almost irritating. You know, the amount of energy you expend has to be greater than the amount you take in, and then you burn fat. I mean, it's as simple as that, but really tricky.
I don't even know what the current popular diet fads are, but there's always a just eat this and you'll lose all kinds of weight. Just eat that. Just take this. Just take that. What is really, is it just moderation really that works best? Or are some of these trendy fad diets actually effective and healthy?
Well, moderation is my MO. So I'll just be clear that, you know, I would love to lose a few LBs and become a physical specimen to be admired. I know that that probably isn't going to be achieved, but, I try to just keep the sugar low and try and avoid sugary drinks and sodas because we know that those contribute to risk for diabetes and weight gain. And I try and keep my saturated fat intake low, meaning that I try to eat fewer hamburgers and more pizzas of salmon. But do I eat hamburgers? Of course. But there's nothing better than a juicier smash burger on a nice Sunday afternoon. But that being said, one diet that has come to light recently is the intermittent fasting diet. Mm. And there have been studies published, one in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is a pretty mainstream journal for physicians that practice clinically. And that is basically taking a chunk of the day and saying, I'm not going to eat anything between these hours. And usually it's an 18-hour period. And so, 18 or 12 or 10, I don't know that there's a specific number, and I don't know the study well enough to quote the numbers from the study, but they did note that there was a reduction in certain inflammatory markers, and there were subjective improvements in thinking, memory, physical performance. I personally have dabbled with the intermittent fasting diet. I find it to be just as challenging as the carb cutting diet. But in terms of does it work, I think we're seeing that it does work, or that it can work for some folks.
Yeah, was it last week or the week before? I can't remember now. I had a colonoscopy and went through the whole procedure with that, including. No eating certain number of hours before the actual procedure took place. And what I do this every time that I've had a colonoscopy. I've had three or four of them, I guess. I always think that, oh, there's no way I can go that many hours without eating or just having bouillon or, clear Jell-O or something like that. But it turns out you can, which makes me think that a lot of what we go through with so-called hunger really is in our heads more than it is in our stomachs. It's something that we just kind of get used to eating all the time when really we don't need to. Turns out I didn't die after all, after just having bouillon for, 24 hours or something. I actually felt kind of good. And, I felt a little less, sluggish and all that.
I think that's a real effect. I don't think that feeling's in your head. I think that's in your body. That's your body telling you, hey, thanks, Dean, for not, shoving processed food and giving me a chance to kind of regenerate. But the trick, of course, is then doing that, replicating that every week, every month, over the long term.
Yeah, it's just getting used to it, right? I think it's just getting used to it.
That's right.
Yeah. Turns out my colonoscopy was just fine, by the way, too. I'm sure you're all.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm sure you're all very concerned about my innards that way. The 407 area code is Parkinson's disease, part of the family of diseases related to dementia.
Parkinson's, yes. So Parkinson's disease is a disease that. Basically, it's a progressive disorder of the nervous system, and it's very commonly associated with dementia. There's also slowed movement, rigidity of the muscles, tremors, speech changes, and it's a chronic disease. Many people would think of somebody like Michael J. Fox. If they're looking for somebody that they can think of and relate to who has the disease, and it can't be cured, but some of the medicines that are available for Parkinson's do help improve the symptoms, and there's some thought that maybe deep brain stimulation may be an option down the line when that becomes more mainstream.
But similar to dementia or not really?
Uh, I, I think you could definitely put it in that category where you basically have these protein changes in the brain that form clumps and basically disrupt the normal architecture of the brain, sort of similar to Alzheimer's, where you have these plaques and proteins that are found in the brain. So, yes.
Similar in how it works, but obviously two completely different things. Dr. Jeremy Silver is the medical director of emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. And it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Doctor. Thank you, and I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you.
Dean, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.